take over and run the conference call today. Because I'm sitting in the Admirals Club right now, but I got to go get on the plane in a few minutes. Jill and Jen, were there any items that were brought up?
Well, Ken's not on. I don't know if, Dale, it seemed to me that we really have just a few items. One was just to get an update of any information on the potential merger. Ken's not on?
He seems not.
And then,
yeah.
Okay. And then the other thing was just to remind everybody that the progress reports are due on the 15th to Ed, so sure and get those in. Other than that, just updates on everybody's progress.
Okay, May 15?
Well,
actually, that's
only for the developmental projects.
Oh, okay.
June 1 for
otherwise, I think, isn't it?
Right, but after you send your progress report to NIAAA, send me a copy of that. But since the developmental projects are in the admin core, those I need on the 15th.
Okay.
So that I can finish mine by the 1st. All of the new developmental projects are being reviewed by John Hannigan, and he's put together a committee, and he's promised me that we will have their reviews by June 1st. So we will probably have a good idea at the RSA meeting of what projects we're going to invite to be in the next round of developmental projects. Dale, can you give us any insight into the number of applications that have come in terms of the ARIS money?
Let me think. So I can't really speak to things like challenge grants, although maybe they're starting to come online where I can get numbers. But really the only thing I am able to comment on is administrative supplements, which I'm sure are of interest. And I only have the perspective from my own division. And what we have at the moment, and they're still trickling in, is my division alone has received requests totaling around $15 million. And
there's a total of $9 million available in the.
At the division level, we've been given a budget in the range of 1.5, maybe a little lower than that. So basically, $10 requested for every one that we have. So this is going to be a pretty severe competition, and we're just. Mm-hmm.
And this is just the first round because they're accepting them for a June 1st deadline too.
Yeah, those were initially stated as dates on which review cycles would begin, and so we knowing that we're not going to commit all our dollars, but we are starting to go through the ones that we have in hand now, and prioritizing them, and there probably will be some awards made. Before June,
right?
But they'll be done conservatively, not knowing what will be coming in at that time. But I suspect anything that comes in much later than June 1 is might have missed the boat. But we'll see. We may still have some in reserve.
Okay. Before I leave. I just want to mention that, Jill, you need to try to schedule a time at the RSA meeting for NIAAA and the Science Advisory Board to get together, independent of the basic science group as well.
Okay.
Okay. You were, I think, supposed to try to get that information, too.
I think it's for availability, and then I can move forward.
Okay. All right. Is there any other items of new business before Jen can take over and kind of go over the projects? Dale, did you have any other comments on the ARIS money?
No, I think I've said about all that I really know about, I guess we'll be seeing what happens with these challenge grants and grand opportunities and whatnot.
I heard that they had received over 50,000 challenge grants at NIH.
Oh, is that right? I hadn't heard.
Yeah.
Actually, the largest mechanisms that are being used here are extending pay lines, and that is starting to go into motion. A lot of them have been run through an internal committee to certify that they did address that the ERA Act and et cetera, et cetera, and that they had appropriate budgets and materials. And so they're getting kind of, everything's still just, nothing's been paid out on them, but they're getting kind of lined up, and grants management is starting to, gather the information they need to get them set up and funded quickly. So probably a little more than half of the money that will be controlling here at NIAAA level will be doled out in that way, by taking grants that had scores. In the case of R21s, I think we're going to scores of 200, and in the case of R01s, I think we're extending our normal pay line down to the 20th percentile, and then using ERA funds to try to pick up as many up to the 30th percentile.
Is there any mechanisms to replace funds that were cut, that 10% cut that most grants took?
Well, there's some pretty explicit language that at least administrative supplements are not for that purpose. And I guess what I think is happening is that those that are being funded, either R01s, and this would just be for 2 years, unless it's a new investigator, and R21s, that I think those are going to be those that meet the ARA criteria and are within those pay line criteria are going to get funded, I believe, full strength. And there might be some that prior to ARA that got fundable scores that haven't yet been paid out, and I think those may also get that treatment, but I don't think they'll be retroactive, catch up on that kind of thing, unfortunately. And I think it's down to technical reasons.
All right, I'm going to have to take off. So Jen, can you and Jill handle the rest of this? And I'm on my way to NIAAA, so that's not a problem.
Ed, I just want to say goodbye before you leave. It's Michael. I just came on.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Ed, are they running a Cinco de Mayo special there in the Admirals Club?
Nothing today. It's just another trip, but another day at the airport.
Okay.
So take care, and I'll talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.
Hi, Ed. Bill, I just had a follow-up, and maybe you don't know anything. What about the competitive revisions?
The competitive revisions, there's not much I can say about that because those go to CSR.
Okay.
And those will, where possible, be assigned to the same study sections that reviewed the parent grant. So those were due, I believe, on the 21st of April. That sound right?
Right. Yes.
And so CSR must have a pile of them right now, and
don't have any sense of how many.
No, I have no clue. We might soon be able to see them show up in our system and get a sense, but I haven't looked for that, and it's probably still a little early.
Right.
But yeah, we'll probably in a month we'll be in a better position to think about that, and I guess. They'll just get a priority score as usual, and I don't know if they'll be put on a separate spreadsheet or whether they'll be mixed in with R01s, and just so it would really depend on the score in that case. But we'll learn more as we go forward. But I have nothing to say beyond that.
Right. Okay.
Dale, the administrative supplement is up to. I don't see a deadline, but you have a review date.
Yes.
So we up to receiving by close to end of the May.
Yes, so the way it is listed on the NIAAA supplement website is that there are going to be there are two dates after which, you know, review will occur, and the first is passed. That was May 1, and we are indeed, you know, looking at the supplements that are in hand right now and trying to make some initial decisions and prioritizations. And then the second date was June 1, and so we feel an obligation to you know, not obligate all our funds now, and we won't. And knowing that we'll be getting more supplement requests rolling in over the month of May, and we may make a cutoff at June 1, but that's not necessarily the case. They could still come in, and if we're still in the reviewing mode, you know, some latecomers might still get in on it. But as I mentioned earlier, there's no shortage of these things. At the moment, you know, we've got $1 for every 10 that have been requested, and come June 1, you know, it could be quite different.
Mm-hmm.
I think naturally people tried to get in before the first. Before the May 1 date, thinking that if you don't get in early, you might not get in at all. But we're gonna be a little patient and try to you know, fund the best of those that we have then. But yeah, I wouldn't be waiting until after June 1.
All right.
But you can check back with me and see where we stand. But I think many decisions will have been made by then.
The nature of the RC2 is quite different from RC1.
Remind me, the RC2, is that the grand opportunities?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I think the basic thing is the dollar amount. And the grant opportunities is in excess of $500,000 per year, whereas the challenge grant is capped at $500,000 a year. I haven't looked at that in a week or two and thought about it, but I think that's the primary difference, unless someone can remember anything that I'm forgetting.
They're much less in category, actually. There's only five or six areas.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the first one that they launched was the challenge grant, right? Hmm. And that started with a solicitation by the NIH director's office to each institute, saying what are your five highest priorities, and so that generated some of those topics. But then they allowed for additional topics, and there's a two-tier sort of system. So you might have noticed some had asterisks on them. Those are the ones that represented institutes' highest priorities, and then there were many others because the list was probably 100 topics long or more. The majority didn't have the asterisks, and they were more to just stimulate people to think, you know, to understand what kind of priorities we had beyond our top five priorities, so to speak.
Right.
Anyways, but and the path those submissions will take will be a little different. Those that responded to the asterisk ones, the top five priorities from the institutes, those are going to get initially looked at by some central committee, and I think they might even be developing special review groups for those. And then I think all the other ones will just go to CSR for review and consideration for funding at the institute level. So now the grant opportunities, I've forgotten But I think in that case, as I think you're saying, there were fewer specific topics outlined. But I'm blanking right now on how many there were.
Yeah.
But I think the idea is those are to enable investigators or maybe groups of investigators to you know reach higher things that would require more money than the typical R01 style project.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. One of the ones that I put in there as a topic had to do with biomarker development, either for alcohol exposure or for tissue injury, and the thought was that, you know, since this is a there's so many dimensions to this problem, you know, like patterns of drinking, you know, what tissue you're going to look at, all these things that you know it seems like it's going to take a larger effort than can occur in anyone's lab, and so I was thinking that it might stimulate some people to band together. Maybe settle on an alcohol model, and maybe you know have one lab do the proteomics, one lab do the metabolomics. That was just one of you know my thinking. That generate some data that can be analyzed and might lead to mechanistic hypotheses, or might just be functional markers that can be you know put into practice. Anyway.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dale. Does anybody else have any other questions or comments on these stimulus grants?
Will the RC1 and RC2 review together?
That's a good question. As I was saying, for the RC1, there is a two-tier or dichotomy there in that ones that responded to the asterisk topics will get kind of handled centrally and might go through a specially formulated review process, whereas all others, which might be the majority of them that were to topics that didn't have the asterisk, will I believe just go to CSR. They will find an appropriate place, as always, in for their review, and then they'll come to us with a score at the institute level for us to consider funding. I'm not clear in my mind at the moment the process that's going to occur for the grand opportunities. But in that case, they didn't ask us for a lengthy list of topics, so it's not clear to me whether that's going to all be done in a central review fashion or not. I'm sorry, I just don't recall at the moment.
Okay.
All right. Did anybody have any other new agenda items that they wanted to discuss before we just go through our updates?
Well, there was a brief mention of the possible merger discussion.
Right.
I don't have a lot to say about that, but I did. I don't know. Maybe perhaps some of you did as well. I tuned into the videocast that was available on videocast, and so I got to hear Ken, give his talk. And I thought he gave a great talk that highlighted some of the important ways that. What differs, you know, between alcohol research and more general substance abuse and drug abuse in particular. So I think he planted some good ideas for that committee to think about that differentiates what we do. And then after Dr. Valco and Warren gave their talks about their respective institutes. There was a period where I forget how they referred to it, but they allowed the public to get up and give 5-minute talks. And so there was a collection of alcohol researchers, Peter Monti, our own Michael Charnas, And I'm forgetting who else. Ganji Szabo, and probably one or two others that I'm blanking on right now. Mac Mitchell.
Mark Schuckett.
Yeah.
And then Sam Donaldson spoke for NOFAS in the later part of the day.
That's right.
And Linda Cheesham as well.
But I was just going to say, I thought those presentations were very, very effective and you know, passionate appeals and very lucid arguments. And so, you know, I think I got the sense that the committee wasn't willing to just table the item immediately. I think they're going to consider it, but they're not going to rush into anything. And I think they've been given, you know, a good starting point for thinking, at least as far as we're concerned.
So are they sort of continuing to deliberate on this before having a director?
I didn't tune in the whole meeting. I don't know if Michael can comment on that. How that ended up.
These are two separate processes that are inextricably linked, but not officially. And the Scientific Management Review Board had two options at the end of the presentation. One was to table discussion about merger. They also considered two other issues. And the other was to look further into it. Members of the Scientific Management Review Board felt that they had been provided so little information that they couldn't really make a decision, and so they wanted to look further at it. And that's basically the basis for their decision to form a subcommittee. Actually, they formed two subcommittees, one of them to consider the details of ANIDA and IAAA merger, and the other to establish guidelines for how to look at this, because one of the overall charges of the SMRB is to look at the structure of NIH, and they don't really have criteria for doing that. They wanted to do so. There was some consternation among at least some of the board members that I talked to that this had come up rather abruptly and without really much information provided to them to make a decision. I don't think that their decision to move on and consider the issue further is a reflection of the merits of the argument that Nora made, because at least some of the people I talked to thought that the counterarguments were compelling, but that they didn't have anything other than what people were saying as a means for making decisions. For example, In the discussion, people referred to the Institute of Medicine report from 2002 or 3 that examined the structure of NIH and contained basically a paragraph that suggested looking at the merger of NIDA and NIAAA. They hadn't been provided that. I had to remind at least one of the ones that I know, one of the board members I know quite well, that particular paragraph was written by Alan Leshner moments after he left NIDA. And so I think these being institute directors and very senior scientists didn't feel that they could make decisions without adequate information, and that's why they're looking on.
Yeah, one of the arguments that was put forth probably by several people, but I remember Dr. Szabo making it, is that, you know, to let this hang out there as an open issue, you know, could be harmful to the research community, the alcohol research community. And I think one of the committee board members, and I don't recall who it was, argued that to not address it, you know, would in effect keep it open in some people's minds. So he kind of flipped the argument around.
This was an argument that we made at council, and that probably three of us made consciously and in coordination at the Scientific Management Review Board, which is that to simply ask the question is to have a consequence. It affects the institute. It affects whether or not they go forward with the search, and it affects the search process itself if the actual position is in question. And I think part of the reason that the Scientific Management Review Board agreed to look at this more closely is that they want to go through a process that either dispels the notion or decides to move forward with it, not over a two-year period, but as quickly as they can. And the SMRB is only obliged to meet five times between now and 2013, and they're really looking at having a series of meetings in the next few months. So hopefully they will move forward and bring to resolution what the SMRB is going to do. The SMRB is of course, an advisory body to the director of NIH. There is no director of NIH at the moment. There's an acting director who probably initiated this. In collaboration with Dr. Zerhouni in his final days, and he did speak, and his comments were more or less in favor of a merger, but didn't seem to be well informed about some of the arguments that were made afterwards, and he's not the director anymore. So the way it works is that the SMRB advises the director, and then the director makes a recommendation to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which at least at the time of the SMRB hadn't been appointed, was the following day. And then the Congress has a period of time to either vote a resolution against it, which would kill it, or to do nothing, and then it would go into effect. And all that is likely, with the mandatory periods of public comment, going to take several years. It's not something that would happen in a month or two or three. But really, the most important time to influence the process is now, because depending on the philosophy of the next NIH director and on the current new secretary, if the board advised it, they could say, what a great idea, and then send it forward. And it's really then a challenge that Congress has to pass a resolution. It's not that Congress will consider it as well. They have essentially a veto, but Congress doesn't always succeed in getting its act together to pass even resolutions in a 60-day period of time, which is something like the period of time that they have after the secretary makes the recommendation. So I think that's where it stands right now. My sense of the pulse of at least some of the institute directors and some of the scientists was that they don't necessarily have a view on this, but they were a little bit startled to be asked to consider it without what they would consider sufficient background.
So that does sound like we would have a director first prior to any decision will be made for these mergers. Is that sound right?
I don't know the answer to that. The part of me that looks for conspiracies in some of this would say that people who were hostile to NIAAA as an independent institute might push the director search while this is going on because it wouldn't produce as strong a director. But I don't know that that's the case.
Yeah, and I would add that my sense is that the first appointment would be a director of the NIH, and
right,
that this appointment of an NIAAA directorship would you know be in their hands.
It would, although last time I believe Elias had not been confirmed when they started the search committee for NIAAA, and that really what you need is the new director to be the selecting official, but not necessarily to constitute the committee, because presumably the committee can do its work and hopefully would wait until there's a permanent director of NIH to make a selection. This would be a very bad time for an NIH director search to go forward, simply because this question is now open and under consideration as to whether there would be a separate institute.
Yeah, so that and if they keep that issue open, it's gonna play a role in whenever it does occur.
Yeah. I think what was heartening at the meeting was that there were either 8 or 9 people speaking against the merger and none speaking in forward apart from Nora. And I think that does have some influence on the members of the Scientific Management Review Board. Of course, they're going to look at the issues autonomously.
Well, this has come up in the past. I mean, has it been the same process?
No, it's a different process this time. The last time this came up was really the Institute of Medicine's report, and they, too, are an advisory body, but not with the same direct link to the NIH director and the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
They sound a lot more serious this time.
I think it is, actually. I do. And I think it's been engineered under sort of cats away, mice will play circumstances. The timing, I don't believe, is coincidental.
Any other questions or comments? Well, thanks, Dale and Michael, on that update.
Yeah.
And, people can see that on the web as well. Any other business?
Hi, this is Jill. I just wanted to remind everyone that the Google Documents to update your CFAS publications is up and running. I think the Sulik Lab was able to access it, and that's great, but just if everyone can do that once a month, then we'll keep on track of what's out there, what's being submitted, and all that stuff a lot more efficiently. And then just another reiteration that progress reports are due on June 1st for most of us. Okay.
By the way, Kathy has been selected for the Rosea Award. I guess it's proper to say it over here.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
That's great.
Thank you. I'm very honored.
I look forward to your talk.
How long is this talk supposed to be? I'm really worried about it.
I guess we in the past has there's somewhere around 20 to 30 minutes. I guess it's relatively flexible over here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Be great.
Well, congratulations. And yeah, just as Jill said, if everyone can get their publications up, that'd be great too. Because I think when we have it on the web, it really demonstrates what our progress is. And if it's not updated by you guys, then it doesn't look as we're not acknowledging all the work that's been done. So I guess.
Yeah, I was just going to say. So was there some discussion of a public side to the website, and would those go on there?
Sorry.
Yeah, Dr. Harold, they'll be moved quarterly to the public website on CIFASD.org.
Okay, that sounds good.
I'm wondering if Charlie's on the call and has anything to say about the special issue he was working on.
I don't think unless he came in late. I know there were a few people that came in late. Charlie?
Looks like not.
No.
I guess as another housekeeping issue, it's really helpful if everyone emails me if they're not going to be able to make the call.
Okay. Those are the people that aren't on the call to hear that, though.
Yeah, I just realized.
Yeah.
All
right. Okay, so just kind of going in through updates of where we're at, I'll just start on the list. Tim?
Right. Okay, so we've got 13 brains in the can, 31 lambs in the ground that are in training now, going through TMAZE training and iBlink training, and then we have 23 animals that are still gestating. But we're on track to complete this, that study in this first study this breeding season, and we'll be submitting a paper to, for publication very shortly, validating the use of the T-maze with the lamb, and that that'll be something that no one else has ever published. And we'll be buying sheep for the second study. I'll put in my order in a couple of days, and that second study is the one where we'll be looking at choline protection using choline. That's pretty much what I have to say.
Okay. Did you get? Was Andy able to get some of the scans? Were you able to resolve some of that?
Brain scans? You're talking about MRI?
He was going to do. He was going to do the. He was. Did he send somebody else to come and do the scanning there for the ultrasound?
Ultrasound, yeah.
Oh, ultrasound. Right. I have emailed Andy to try to set up. You know, to remind everyone in the group. Andy broke his hip and was unable to come in January when we had scheduled him to come and work with us to use the prenatal ultrasound screening on the sheep. And last week I emailed him, and I haven't heard back from him with respect to his availability. But I'm hoping that he will be available to come in either of December or January, and we will try to do what we planned to do last year.
Okay.
Tim, I have a question for you. So I know there's been a lot of crazy weather running through Texas, and does that affect your experiments? I'm picturing these lambs out in an open field or in a barn or something, and does that affect, you think?
The weather, the crazy weather that you've been seeing, it's very, very local. And so there are places that aren't very far away that have had catastrophic weather. And whereas, you know, where I am exactly, it's not been a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the lambs, they live in a barn that's open on all four sides, but it's a very large roofed structure, and they have a little wind protection, but they've been fine.
Mm-hmm.
The only untoward thing that happened this breeding season is we had an outbreak of copper toxicity. People are very sensitive to copper, and the feed mill made an error in compounding the feed, and we lost 8 animals from copper poisoning. That's why we have, some of these animals that are gestating had to, you know, we had to rebreed new animals because of the copper poisoning. That's slowed us down a bit.
Okay.
Any other questions for Tim? So, Kathy?
I'm putting figures together for our second paper. We hope to have it submitted within the next few weeks. We have collected, we're ready to start our day 7 to 11 low-dose alcohol exposure, chronic exposure. The part of the study that Zoe has already sent us animals for is 7 through 17. We have a young lady who's been helping us segment, but she is from Pakistan and has had to have a little time off to get all of her visa stuff back in order, and she's back segmenting again, so we should be able to get Dr. Zoe's stuff finished up fairly shortly. And so we're just perking along. I submitted a challenge grant along with Al Johnson and Martin Steiner here, in response to NIAAA's challenge about developing new DTI technologies. And so in the very outside chance that it might get funded, it would give us an opportunity to maybe advance our field so that we could be starting to look at live animals and look at later stages rather than just the fetal stages with the technologies that will be developed. So that's all I have to say, I guess. Good. And Fong?
Yeah, we've finished the one of the high dose for the facial imaging, and that is completed. The papers should be done within a few days and send it out. Along with that group, the micro CT is being written. That should probably in a few weeks to get it done. We're going to move on to a time course difference, as Kathy mentioned, about 7 to 11. We're going to look into lower dose of the alcohol to see the difference of the facial images. In the next year run, we will move on for looking to the brands in compare or correlate with the facial dysmorphology. So that's something we're looking into. Tim's sheep, for staining of the sirtuin neuron, for some time it was puzzling that the why the staining was not there. It finally we found out it was due to the pH value of the buffers. So we actually figured out systematically and that took care of the problem. So now that the sheep brain are standing with the immunochemistry very well, so we will move on for that project. Other than that, I think we were pretty engaged at trying to move this forward. We sent in a challenge grant. That's regarding. We have teamed up with Purdue, who has a very very well set up metabolomic system out there. So we would look into the metabolomic analysis of the fetal alcohol exposure and only look into the fetal tissue because of time and the scope. Then we're trying to use that to interpret, because the metabolite is the end product of the gene expression. We wonder, will that be incorporated to better understanding the gene as well as the metabolites differences as a consequence of the alcohol. So that's what we have done for the challenges. That's what I have.
Okay. Just an update on the developmental project. This last month have just been primarily generating and sending tissue to Carl for analysis. So we have blood, liver, and brain of both the dams and the pups, or the fetuses, so that they can be analyzing the choline levels and choline metabolite levels in that tissue. So we're waiting to get some data from that. Any other updates or issues?
This is Andy Aronson, and I'll just throw out a general interest in understanding how the basic science projects are or aren't sharing data amongst each other. I try very hard to understand your various aims and the work you're doing, and frankly, it's a challenge. So I really need to rely on you if you have an interest in integrating data amongst the various groups and to let me know so we can talk about whether or not there's anything the Informatics Corps can do to help that.
Okay. Anybody have any need for Andy's suggestions?
Not at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Like I said, there's no other business. We're finished, so 10 minutes early. And I look forward to seeing everybody here. I guess we'll have one more call before our for RSA. But that's it. Thanks a lot.
With regard to RSA, after I receive Dr. Riley's availability during the meeting, then I'll be in touch with all of you as to when there's a 3 to 4 hour time slot for you all to get together.
Terrific.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.